Right now, though, at 7:22, we're joined on the phone by State Representative Patrick Windhorse. Good morning, Mr. Representative. How are you?
Doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. First of all, thank you so much for making some time for us. Got our wires crossed yesterday. We were originally scheduled, but you're good enough to come back on the show today, and hopefully we can get this all settled away.
Well, I always appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's been a busy year for lawmakers in Springfield. Guess the biggest issue before us, the assault weapons ban and registry. As of now, it looks like it is going into effect on January 1st. Should people assume it's not the law or hold out registering, or what should we do when it's still tied up in the courts?
Well, we had hoped, those of us who oppose the law, that we would have an answer from the federal courts that would be somewhat definitive before the end of the year, and it does not appear that that's going to be the case. There are several legal efforts still out there and ongoing, and I remain optimistic that the law will ultimately be held unconstitutional. When the Bruin decision, which is what had given optimism to those who oppose the law, the Bruin decision from last year from the U.S. Supreme Court, when that was handed down, there was a Maryland assault weapons ban from the Second Circuit that was returned to the Second Circuit for a ruling. And that ruling has not yet been made, even though it was sent back last year. So, we've heard about the U.S. Supreme Court not taking up Illinois' ban yet. I think what we're seeing is the U.S. Supreme Court waiting till the various circuits have final rulings on this issue, and then that way they can take up the issue as it's more settled in the circuits. So I would guess that we will see into next year, we will see the case finally make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and maybe 2025 before that final ruling occurs. But I think we'll begin to see as we go into the year what's going to happen as it relates to the U.S. Supreme Court and whether it's going to take up this ban. Now, we are also waiting here on the state level for final rules from JCAR, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. They have been waiting to receive and approve the final rules that are coming from the state police. There was a hearing earlier this month where there were several questions raised about the implementation of the law. So we are still waiting to see how those rules, if they're adopted, and how they are going to be implemented by the state police. So even though we've been dealing with this legislation, now law, for about a year, there are a lot of things that still have to play out.
I'd like to call on your experience in the past as the state's attorney. When groups and advocates on both sides of this assault weapons issue are so convinced and the rhetoric is so definitive that they are right, it must not quite be the case, because we get it before a judge and most of them say, well, I don't want to be the one to rule on this, and they kind of pass the buck. I mean, is it really that unsettled?
I think what we're seeing is the after effects of the Bruin decision that I referenced. That was viewed as a shift in the law, in that it's the shift in how lower courts are supposed to evaluate regulations of firearms. And, it was a strong pro-Second Amendment ruling, and I think there are some lower courts who maybe don't agree with the ruling. I don't want to speak for those judges, obviously, but I think there are some courts that don't necessarily agree with the Bruin decision and don't want to give it the breadth that the Supreme Court gave when it issued that ruling. So they are being a little more cautious with that decision than maybe the Supreme Court will be when it ultimately hears the case. There, in addition to the assault weapons or the firearm ban that we passed in Illinois, there are other laws and regulations throughout the country that are currently being heard by the Supreme Court, some dealing with orders of protection and whether you can have a firearm ban related to a receiving order of protection. That's currently before the Supreme Court. And then there's other weapons issues that will be making their way to the Supreme Court. So I think what we're seeing is we have a groundbreaking decision in Bruin. The people who support the Second Amendment see that as groundbreaking and believe it should be given broad scope. Those who don't support the Second Amendment as strongly are wanting it to be more limited. So you're seeing that fracture, I guess, in not only play out in public, but in the courts. And ultimately, it'll be up to the Supreme Court to make a final ruling.
One last question from the American Monument text line on this subject. It comes from Andy. He says, the law allows for the state police to update the banned list every October. But also, according to the law, everything's supposed to be registered prior to January 1st of 2023. He says, how is that to be addressed? If they keep updating it every year, I'm assuming is his question.
Yeah, and that is an excellent question, and one that we, as the opponents of the law, have raised throughout this process, that by establishing a firm deadline, as the listener notes, then when they're changed the law, that firm deadline is not expanded. So what we'll have to see is if the court does not strike down this statute or provide some other change to it based on this incongruity in the statute, then we'll have to see as the legislature us coming forward to reform that part of it. But I think what that listener highlighted is one of the reasons why this law is likely ultimately not to withstand scrutiny, because there are issues in the law that are potentially in conflict, and that is a big one that was highlighted.
We're on the phone with State Representative Patrick Windhorst. Coming out of this year, we have a budget surplus, but in the future, projected to be a budget deficit. Where are the lawmakers in spending? We've never had a budget that goes down, so how are we going to deal with that deficit?
That is the concern that we, on my side of the aisle, had raised in the last couple of years when we had a more rosy financial picture. Some of that was based on money from the federal government. There was also inflation that was causing the state revenues to increase. The comments we had were, let's not increase baseline spending that will stay, programs that will stay beyond the fiscal year. And when we may see a reduction in the revenues, let's be more cautious in our approach, use this additional revenue to pay down debt or provide tax relief, or potentially both. But unfortunately, the majority decided they would give a little bit more, just not enough in my opinion, but a little bit more to reducing debt and mainly more to increase spending. So as you mentioned, when the revenues go down, or if they do not increase at the pace with the expenditures will increase, then we will see a deficit again. We will have to make cuts or increase taxes, which are two things that we would not want to do. I've, of course, been opposed to tax increases and believe that's one of the reasons we're seeing a large out-migration of people from our state. Instead, we need to be focusing on restoring fiscal order to our budget and budget process and providing tax relief where we can.
We're on the phone with State Representative Patrick Windhorst. Coming out of the veto session, the small modular nuclear reactors, one of the few things that got passed. But from what I understand, this really won't kick in till about 2026 after a study on them is given to the General Assembly. What was the... I'm trying to put this into words. When you had a veto like that, what was the feeling among lawmakers to come back and really... redo this whole legislation to get into accordance with what the governor wanted?
Well, we felt like we had enough votes to override the veto, that they would be there. But the leadership, I believe in the House primarily, but I'm sure also in the Senate, decided that the bill would not go forward without agreement from the governor's office. And that, you know, that's the leadership prerogative, and the sponsor of the bill, one in the Senate was a Republican and the House was a Democrat, worked together in a bipartisan way and worked with the governor's office to come up with legislation that he would sign. So, you know, in that respect, you see people working together to achieve a result, which is pretty well in line with what was hoped to occur with the original bill. What we also see is hope that this will produce a better energy policy environment in our state going forward. Yes, as you note, we're not going to see the immediate effects of this. It's going to be some time, but it is a victory, and it's a victory that we should be happy about, because, you know, from that side, from that policy position, there haven't been many victories So we're hopeful that there will be more.
We've been speaking with State Representative Patrick Windhorst this morning, 731 News Radio WJPF. Mr. Windhorst, any final thoughts before I let you go? Any hopes for the year ahead?
Well, I hope everyone listening has a happy and healthy Christmas and New Year, and a very positive and joyous season, and also a positive 2024. I'm so thankful for the opportunity to represent Southern Illinois in the General Assembly. It's the honor of my life, and I'm thankful for that every day, and appreciate that opportunity very much.
732 News Radio, WJPF, State Representative Patrick Windhorst, thanks as always for your time.
Thank you, Robert.